Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I have invited on the program author Andrew Fetter, and we will be talking about his new novel. It's his second book out, titled The Heretic. So Andrew Fetter grew up in what he considers a dysfunctional Jewish family in California and studied at San Diego State University. Andrew then traveled to Israel, where he attended university, worked as a grape farmer, and studied under a holy man. He continued his studies of the Kabbalah in the United States, studying under renowned psychic, mystic, and healer Jeannou St. Clair and her husband, mystic Elliot Atlas. He has also driven a limo, worked as a telemarketer selling long distance, been an assistant director in the film industry, and currently works as a graphic artist. He is the author of two novels, as mentioned, the first, When Angels Have Risen, and now his new novel, The Heretic. So with that said, welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Andrew.
Well, thank you for having me on your show, Juanita.
Great. You know, such a diverse life. How and why did you decide to begin a writing career?
I've been writing since my college days, mainly doing op-eds, editorials, small essays. Eventually, I toured the middle of, I guess they say, the so-called midlife crisis. I evolved my writing into novels and screenplays, especially when I was associated in the film business during the mid-90s.
Oh, okay. So you write screenplays as well. Mm-hmm. Oh, any of these two novels you think you're going to write a screenplay of?
I love to.
Yeah.
Or just get picked up, either way.
Yeah, great. So The Heretic is set in ancient Greece during the time of Alexander the Great. What was it that drew you to this period? Has this always been a time period that was important to you?
Well, yes. I was thinking about doing an element of regression in my next book following after I had written When the Angels Have Risen. And when I decided to do that period piece during Alexander the Great's time, I figured of all major men of history, I felt he was fundamentally has affected in many ways our lives, especially on the Western Hemisphere, and culturally everything. And yet I thought he was so far ahead of where he was and yet so young. So that sort of intrigued me. And yet there was very little that I've known. You know, everybody expands upon the Roman period, but when you get down to it, it's really been since the time of Alexander the Great. So that's why I was just curious. And when I delved into it, it was like layers opened up more. And the more I started, as I did my research, which took about a year, I gained a better understanding, not just the historical sense, but also the personification of Alexander the Great.
Well, tell us a little bit about him because, you know, it's a very common name. Everyone's heard of Alexander the Great, but I don't know that people really know the historical significance when he was alive. I know it was probably a few hundred years before B.C., right?
Mm-hmm, right, 300, yeah. A little 300, yeah. He came right after King Philip, who was at the time trying to unite the Greek city-states, which was in chaos because they were constantly being almost like affected by the Persian Empire at the time, playing one state off another, keeping them divided, therefore controlling the situation, especially of the Mediterranean at that time. He was young, and then when he actually, he was also the pupil of Aristotle at the time.
I don't think a lot of people know that.
Yeah.
Is that common knowledge?
Not really, and that's what was really intriguing, because as though he learned a lot of philosophy, he agreed with Aristotle. People didn't realize Aristotle is very ethnocentric. He, in a sense, he felt that Greeks were actually more superior than everybody else, being that they are more civil, so everybody else was less. So that's where, down the line, there was a conflict between Alexander the Great as Alexander started conquering countries. And by the way, a lot of the conquests he did that were not only done on the battlefield, more than anything, he actually conquered people just by his own benevolence. He had an idea where he would unite countries under his banner, of course, and he says, you know what, you just pay us our tribute, you can believe whatever god you want and have your own leadership. So he'd retain this, their local satraps, their local leaders, under his own, you know, within their own system. And because of that, they, you know, they respected him. You know, all they had to do was pay taxes. What do they care if they paid taxes to one or another? But now they lived under basically a freedom, which is unheard of at that time. You know, I mean, they're even subsequent to that, the Romans were very tyrannical. He was not a, you know, he didn't form any tyranny toward any people. He basically let people do what they wanted. And that's why he was so gratiated under a lot of peoples. I mean, that's why even when he went to Judea, he went to the Egyptians, the people of Asia Minor. I mean, he had subsequent, obviously, serious triumphs during his battles with the Persian empires and other nations, but very minor. His, and you got to realize, he was young. He was like in his
20s. That's
unbelievable to be, and he was basically a prodigy. But then people have to realize, here's a young prodigy, a teenager, a 20-year-old, but then he had the emotional outbursts of any other teenager would get all upset about.
Right.
He had those feelings, so that's what you had to take in consideration, too. By the way, he was also a very religious man.
He was.
So, yeah, he was extremely devout toward the Greek gods. He felt he was a man who basically had lineage through Hercules and Achilles. He also looked, he literally looked at Iliad, the Homer's book, as almost like his second Bible, if you want to call it that. And he looked on that ambience of historical value and religious sense. But you can literally, everywhere he would, you know, finish a battle, he would throw his thanks to his Zeus and his gods. And, you know, and I make a joke about it within my book about you can just follow his trail by all the burnings and altars that he left behind, because he would literally burn his way down, you know, along the, from Greece onto India.
Right down, yeah. How important was it for you to really maintain that level of historical accuracy?
Well, I wanted to do, when I did the research, I wanted to get all the specifics, especially the battle scenes, a lot of the situations, because I know people gloss over situations with whether it's his battle scenes, some of the situations that happened with the strife that also happened between him and his father, and how what his mother was. And actually, that was actually the easiest stuff to get into, to find out his historical events, but it was actually to find his own personality was the hardest, because there wasn't that much. But as I started delving into more and more and more, and then I started figuring out where his own personality was, and then it just became more understanding of where he was at that time.
Mm-hmm. So what type of research did you do? You said that you had researched for about a year. Where did you, was it libraries, internet?
Basically, I went to the university and did both internet, both a library inside the university here in the UNLV in Nevada, and by also got getting information through other universities via UNLV. And then I basically put together, that helped me actually line up exactly where the, how the battle scenes, how the, his things were. And then when I started delving it, as I was researching, little bits and pieces would leave. Okay, no, but this is reflected from something else, which led to something else. So I kept on going, you know, I kept on finding more and more and more.
Yeah.
And then as I was doing it, then basically the puzzle was put together.
So how do the two books flow together? Because I know The Heretic is a sequel to When Angels Have Risen.
Well, there is a year, which I don't talk about within the When the Angels Have Risen. This is during the time when Jerry Fletcher, the main character, is now a U.S. senator. And so that's why it's a sequel. It's during that 1 year I don't talk about. And so, and that's how it goes into the next area. And you can either, I purposely wrote the book so it didn't matter whether you read one before or one after. It would be, each one would be on their own.
Okay, great. So tell us about Jerry Fletcher, because he's the main guy in these two books, and then what's basically happening in The Heretic with him.
Well, basically, this is, again, in the future of the United States. There had been already a civil war that broke out. He's now a U.S. senator, and he's very progressive and independent in his own way of thinking. And he's about to give a major conference, and after he does his little conference, he goes over to, and he's now in Los Angeles, and he goes to the museum, and he, by the way, he's having also, in the meantime, you find out that he's having very unusual dreams, and he bumps into an ex-girlfriend at this art museum, which has ancient artifacts, and they have bring up this display of found artifacts, and he reads off what it says in Greek, and he doesn't know Greek.
Mm.
And so then his ex-girlfriend tells him, maybe you should see a psychic and find out why you're having all these weird dreams and how you know all this stuff. So then he goes, gets regressed. And by the way, the regressions that I perform in there are from my own experience, because I have been regressed. And three of those life experiences are actually mine. I implemented into the book.
Well, I definitely want to talk to you more about the regression aspect of your book.
Okay.
Certainly.
So then it definitely goes through that area. And then, lo and behold, after he goes through three past lives, then lo and behold, he finds himself on the island of Crete during the time, subsequently, like some 20 years after the passing of Alexander the Great. And his kids are, checking out his old armor and stuff, and they all want to hear the story of their dad, Aeneas. So he starts telling them the old stories, and that's how the story starts.
Okay. So how did you develop his character of Aeneas?
Basically, I had a feeling. I just created the feeling of what the personality, what I wanted out of Aeneas. I wanted since he was looked up at as very different, very independent, an anomaly, basically, within their own society. I wanted him to come out like he was a challenge to their own belief system, yet they respected him because of his military attributes. And what I try to do with his personality. And I try to make it so that you come off and he's got, some of it is very, you may think he's misogynistic at one time, but then he's very sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Then he's like Mr., cavalier with all the women, but then all of a sudden you'll find down the line he's, he falls in love and you see him go through his stages. You watch as he goes through his life. As things change in his life, he changes. And the same situation happens with Alexander. You'll see the parallel as Alexander's relationship with him and through the things that happen during the battle scenes and everything else, he also changes too. So there's a parallel. But basically, Aeneas was the you had everything flipped around, of society, culture, beliefs. I mean, he was believed in one God, or everybody believed in, or polytheists. He was one of the few heterosexuals in ancient Greece, where most were very bisexual, homosexual. He had a different belief system. He also brought out where he was disenchanted, where people were killing each other over gods, which even today people still kill each other over who God is better than my God, right?
Very true.
Still today.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still that same situation. So that's why I created a parallel, what would our society today, and that how he was living in his day.
Is there any parallels other than that character that you're seeing in modern day?
Yes and no. I mean, I see, if that type of character was today, they would look at, it would be like, somebody who could be, I don't see anybody today living in, like, at the moment,
mm-hmm.
Somebody I know of, that kind of person. But it would be somebody who would be very challenging. People would respect him, but then, look at him as an oddity for what he has to say. I mean, it would be sort of hard to say, could it be like an Einstein who challenged us with great beliefs, but then this guy was like a James Bond type. He was also very a military man, like a Jet Li in his day, as far as military attributes. So it's a whole persona of different elements that I don't see it today, but as far as politically and religiously, I believe there are a lot of IES is out there in our society, challenging.
Oh, yeah.
There are a lot of heretics, and I think there are more people are questioning and more people are challenging. And they used to take heresy or heretics as something negative, but I was trying to show it's a positive. It creates us to, you know, it challenges our belief system, the question thing.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Did you know that audiobooks are the fastest growing publication in the book publishing industry with over $1 billion in sales annually? And did you know that over 40 million audiobooks were sold last year? This clearly shows that millions of avid readers enjoy listening to books in their cars, while at work, traveling, and even while exercising or walking. Not only that, many individuals with vision issues rely on audiobooks to access the literary world. If you are an author interested in taking the next step with your book and tapping into an entirely new audience, we can help you turn your manuscript into a professionally produced audiobook. Visit us at readerviews.com and click on the Services for Authors tab in the top menu bar. There you will find a list of services we provide, plus a link to get the information you need to turn your work into an audiobook. The potential of the audiobook has been proven and may just be the ideal next step for you in promoting your masterpiece. Go to readerviews.com today.
And now back to Inside Scoop Live with your host, Juanita Watson.
Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm speaking with Andrew Fetter, author of The Heretic. You can find more about Andrew through his website, www.andrewtheheretic.com. Well, I was wondering if you were making any statements to the state of the world today and what we may foresee in the near future in this book.
In this particular book, no. Yes and no. My first book, When the Angels Ever, is definitely there was a change. It's definitely showing things how they are. But in this particular book, I wanted to show a cultural a flip, and also besides political and religiously, I wanted to, it was basically a little bit more to have fun, because this book was a lot of fun writing.
I'm sure.
It was more, excitement, killing, the sex, the violence, the war, the intrigue of the historical times, but in the same sense, it had parallels of the politics of his time as politics of our time.
Mm-hmm. So you consider both Jerry and Ais both heroes. Tell us about that.
Yeah, basically heroes in a different sense. Ais was a hero in the sense that he was out there doing something, but did not want his name known. He did it totally unselfishly. They say that the greatest deed is to do something without expecting any reward for it, and that's basically what he was trying to do. He was trying so hard to unite and try to, and he was backing up Alexander. He tried to do things, yet he didn't want. He was so unselfish. He did not want any. He didn't want his name engraved. He didn't want any recognition for all the things he's done. So in a sense, he was a great hero of his day in that respect. Mm-hmm. And then as far as Jerry Fletcher, here was a guy who, which you would have to read in the When the Angels Have Risen, but it's more where he was a guy who didn't really want to get involved with politics at all or any of that stuff, and yet he was eventually pulled into it. And then eventually became, it was almost his destiny to become hero in his own right, to stand up and say, and do, which caused a cataclysm of change of events.
Mm.
He just had to be the person to be the vessel to say what was right.
Mm-hmm. Are you Jerry?
Am I Jerry?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think every author puts a little bit of themselves in it.
Yeah.
In their own situations, whether it's O'Neill's books or one of my favorite authors is Kurt Vonnegut.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I emulate. And I like how he wrote stories of future of different events, dealt with politics and the future. And yet his books, he wrote books back in the 50s that relate to even today.
Absolutely. So. Yes. Well, I was wondering where you were in this book. Now, I want to talk about the reincarnation theme and your decision to really place this novel in that context. So how did that all come about? I know that you're a strong believer in reincarnation.
Yeah, I'm very, very spiritual in my own right.
Mm-hmm.
And what I wanted to do, I wanted to create a connection and show a venue where this person, because in the first book, it dealt with some aspects of spirituality. So then in this book, I wanted to do a different level and more on a one-on-one rather than a more of a social spiritual essence. So I started getting into wanting to have this person to go back into his past life. So what I did is I used their own regression, which I was performed on me, which I can also perform as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually use that, what you'll read in the book, the actual way of putting how a person goes down the line. So that I did that. And
it's
like a deep hypnosis,
right?
It's not really a hypnosis. You're really going toward almost like an estate, and then it pulls you into that area.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, hypnosis is taking your unconscious. This is actually having your soul, because I believe your soul is always with you. You're always tagged with all the information in all your past lives. It's taking you back through those parallels. So what I did was go back in step by step by step and like show three particular lifetimes. And the actual way you would be reading it is exactly how it would functionally happen. And then everybody has their own experience as they go down the line.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people will see visual and see perfect. Some people just see smell. Some people may not feel or see anything, and that's okay too, because maybe some people are not ready to do that because there's certain reasons for them not to be able to see that. Because tendencies for people to regress will want to find, they want to live their past life into their present life, which is not the whole point. You shouldn't do that. So it was just to find to answer questions of past life experience, which would explain now, like, you know, why you have sudden fear of water. Well, maybe you were drowned in a past life.
Right.
Or why you have this fear of certain situations, or, you know, and it all relates, or why you're, it's a circle. Sometimes people, you know, the old thing where people in a certain family circle, and this is getting pretty in a bad sense, where their parents are alcoholics and they become alcoholics,
mm-hmm.
or wife beaters and they become beaters, also
mm-hmm.
beaters.
Mm-hmm.
And the same circle events could possibly have happened from something during their past lives, and it's brought into this past life. And that's why I feel it's very intriguing to know going through regressions and knowing your past lives.
It's really intriguing, and I think more and more people are accepting it because they go through a regression and they really feel that to be true. And so applying that information or having questions answered through that is really, really powerful. So I'd like to know from you, in those three regressions that did make their way into The Heretic, what did you learn about yourself from those?
One of them was ironic. It's pretty weird because there was one in there that was actually an old girlfriend who she wanted me to regress her, so I regressed her, and then lo and behold, what happened was, in the time we weren't seeing each other, but it turned out to be her I was actually inside her regression. It sort of sucked me into it.
Mm.
In fact, that was the one in my book where it talks about the knight and the witch and all that, the Wiccan
girl.
And then I also, let's see, there's that. And then also I think with the reference with the Warsaw Ghetto, I mean, that related to my feelings toward that. And also Native American, which I didn't understand by Native Americanism. I still had past, did regressions, so I don't want to get into, but when I lived in Israel, for some reason, when I first went there, I knew Hebrew already, like really quickly. Even though I was raised Jewish, I was raised Jewish and went to Hebrew school and all that stuff, but I didn't really learn Hebrew.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason over there, I naturally adapted to it. And the weirdest thing was I knew areas without ever being there. Like I knew Jerusalem like the back of my hand, but never been there.
Really?
I knew areas all over Israel, like En Gedi and a lot of areas that I just knew, like I'd been there before. It was really bizarre.
Do you think that you typically can be drawn to areas that maybe you've lived before?
Yeah, and I think I'm also drawn to go to certain areas. Like I have this deep desire to go to the Far East, specifically like China and Japan, and I know I've been in that areas at one lifetime. So I'm just curious, you know, what that is, that connection. And there's areas like in the United States, I've always been fascinated, like particularly in the High Plains, which where I can relate to when I wrote in the book about the, me being Arapaho. That's how I related to that, because I saw myself there, and I can, and that's how I almost related to a lot of Native American customs and what they do and thought. So it all, see, it all felt like, you know, it made sense, you know, it all, okay, now that's why this is like, I'm like this
the
now.
The pieces that's of the puzzle start fitting.
Yeah, and I also had a thing, too. I noticed in my past lives, I was only living up to 40. Something violent would happen.
Uh-oh.
That was a break-off. Yeah, I know. So I turned 40, got all nervous.
Really? Stay at home that day.
Yeah, but I noticed I was always dying at 40 years old. Something, some out of some violent thing, like in the Warsaw or the ghetto uprising, or it was a Indian, a Native American, or in the Middle Ages. Those three lives, I all died exactly when I turned 40. So.
Well, you're over 40 now, right?
Yeah, I'm 49.
Okay, well, good thing. Maybe you've learned whatever lesson, or who knows what's happening now with this life.
Mm-hmm.
So is that reincarnation theme going to flow into your next book?
My next book, actually, I'm working on another book, which is going to be more in the spiritual book. Gets into going out of body experiences.
Interesting.
So, and that's a different kind of novel, and it's gonna become more like a more of a graphic novel, almost like the Sin City, more of a theme type to it, more like very, you know, I'm gonna have draw pictures. I'm also an artist. I want to incorporate some pictures within that book.
That's a great idea. That's wonderful. So tell us a little bit more about this perception that you have about life and how your spirituality really drives you, because obviously it's really making its way into your book, so it must really be a strong part of your life and how you carry yourself in your life.
I believe to incorporate that, because I think it's part of me, so I try to place bits, whatever information I can of my own, whether it's my spiritual experiences or themes I'm trying to relate to in any of my books, whatever I do. I mean, because that's sort of part of it, whether it's social or political. I think it's, you know, when people talk up it's politics and their religion and spirituality, and a lot of people want to separate them, but I believe you can't really separate them because they're all interlinked somehow. So that's why I incorporate them all, and it's a very gray area. So, and I put my own feelings in, like when the angels have risen, when I wrote that, it was basically for people to stand up and believe in themselves. It was that sort of theme I was trying to project in that, you know, hey, you know, I'm not going to take any more kind of thing, the old network, you know, hell no. And then in this book, The Heretic basically was getting into more of a one-on-one societal, cultural thing left. Things were flipped. And that it's okay to listen to the heretic. It's okay to listen to somebody who says something a little bit different than you're used to. It's somebody who challenges the way you think or what you do. And don't just go, oh, because you're dictated to it for whether it's the clerics telling you this is the way it went. Well, maybe that's not the way it went.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why I wanted to, you know, change that. That's, you know, maybe what we've been told all the time is a lie, you
sure.
know.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what that background of this book. Yet I wanted to show that the greatest deed you can do is, like I said, is do something without expecting anything from it.
Great.
Like especially your name.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I think your books are just fantastic and really have, you know, they stand on their own, but there really is statements, if you look there, to the world we're living in today and what we may see in the future or potentially. So I love books that have themes like that as well. So what's your website, Andrew?
It's for this book, for The Heretic, it's andrewtheheretic.com.
Okay.
And it's at, you know, www.andrewtheheretic.com. And it also has a link to my When the Angels Have Risen, which is on there. But you can also go directly to that one as well, which is just Andrew Feder, FEDER.com, and also they're interlinked, so you can go back and forth as well.
Great.
And on that have links to Amazon, Barnes & Noble, to my publisher. It also has stuff about me as well as about the book on both sites.
Great. So who's it reading your books? Is it more men? Are there women that are reading and enjoying both of these books?
I think generally, yeah. At first, I was sort of nervous, actually, to tell you the truth, when I wrote The Heretic, because there's a lot of, gets into some erotic straight up front. And by the way, there's a warning label in the beginning of my book.
Is there really? I didn't see that.
I put it inside the book. I have selective Tourette's syndrome.
Oh.
That's what I call it. Because
mm-hmm.
there's a lot of profanity, because my mom goes, she read the first and she goes, "What? I can't believe the words you use in this book. Oh, my God." And the sex. Oh, my God.
Oh, she just can't believe her son came up with that, eh?
Yeah, really. So anyway, that was what I was afraid of. And then yet I noticed from a lot of reviewers that have been, surprisingly, a lot of reviewers are women,
mm-hmm.
and they love my book. So I guess that part was okay, and the sex and violence was okay. So since I've been getting very good reviews over that, and then responses from people who've read it and contacted me, you know, they all love it. They, you know, they can't get enough of it. So
yeah.
They keep asking when I'm going to write another one. And I go, oh, okay.
Yeah, no, you are really, really getting great, great reviews. How did you find self-publishing at this point?
Originally, I was trying to, in fact, the book I'm about to release, Spirit, which I'm going to release in a couple, 2-3 years, was originally being picked up to a subsidiary of Random House through, and then 9/11 happened, and then lost the editors and tore up our contract because it was through St. Martin Press, and then I had to start all over again, and it became really hard because they basically merged so many, and it was frustrating. And then I knew from experiences from authors I know who have already signed with independent publishers, you end up doing everything anyway yourself. So I said, well, why don't I just take full control and become more self-published, and that way I have control, and that way I can, you know, output. I mean, you're limited as far as your revenue, as far as advertising revenue.
Mm-hmm.
But today with the internet and, you know, like I have a wide audience in the UK and I haven't even been in the UK.
I bet you would, that your book would really suit a European audience very well. Have you thought about going over there?
Well, actually, it's sort of funny. My first book, When the Angels Have Risen, was a hit in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
And then without me even advertising or anything there, Heretic got picked up over there, and it's been going really good over there, as well, you know, without me even doing anything.
Yeah.
So yeah, and that. So my son-in-law is from the UK, so I was thinking about heading over there and maybe doing a tour. But with today's information age of the internet, it's almost like you don't even have to. You can connect with so many people around the world and promote things. It's making the little guy big, you know, with the internet.
True.
So
mm-hmm.
that's why also I felt like I can self-publish, because now I'm one-on-one with even the big people, because with very, you know, with I can reach, you know, millions and millions of people are on the internet.
Yeah, absolutely. It's really there for you. If you just do the footwork and
yeah.
do a little marketing yourself, it's amazing how far you can go on your own.
Mm-hmm.
Well, congratulations, Andrew, and I'm just so happy that you joined us on the program today. It's been great talking with you.
Well, thank you for having me on your show. I loved discussing my material, and again, thanks.
Yeah, you bet. Did you have any final thoughts you wanted to share?
No, just if anybody you know, has any questions with my book, I even give you my email address, because I'd like to hear, you know, get contact information after you've read it and have your thoughts and things. You can always contact me at flyingpigs@artlover.com. And also, I do have my own radio show at bbsradio.com, and my show is called When Pigs Fly, and it's on every other Friday.
bbsradio.com.
Mm-hmm.
Great, great. I will definitely check that out as well. Well, thanks so much, Andrew. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
All right. Well, there you go, listeners. Thanks so much for listening to Inside Scoop Live today. I've been talking with Andrew Fetter, his book that just came out, The Heretic, and his first book, When Angels Have Risen. Both are available through local and online booksellers. check it out as well. His website, AndrewTheHeretic.com and AndrewFetter.com. And as well, we'll plug his radio show, BBSRadio.com. All right, so thanks again. I'm Juanita Watson. Until next time.